Hello, everybody. Welcome to our online lecture of our deep learning course. Deep reinforcement learning course. This time in this slightly different setting. So before I will get started by myself, are there any questions, comments, or anything on your side? We even have the chat, so if you want not to speak and instead just write out. Yep. Nah, I was wondering whether there isn't any question. I probably need to open the participant list as well. Like this. So then let's get started. Today, our first topic is the soft actor critic. That's an algorithm which I'll be talking about for the first time in this course. So some things may be still a bit rough around the edges, but hopefully it will work fine. So the soft actor critic. It is another approach for an algorithm which would work with continuous action spaces. It was introduced in a paper by a large group of authors in January in 2018, and then it was followed by a continuation paper nearly the end of the year, where the authors also really learned how to control a physical robot by training just by real-world interactions without any models or physical simulations. And the paper was interesting in a sense that it slightly changed the general reinforcement learning setting and explicitly introduced the entropy to the value which we want to optimize. So we have been using the entropy penalty to make sure that the policies generated for the actors don't diverge in a sense that it wouldn't be possible to explore or to sample from them. So for that, we've been using the penalty, but it can be used in a slightly more principled way, which we will show. So as I said, until now, we really just wanted to optimize the return. in the whole treatment, we will generally assume that the rewards are deterministic, and we will use this mu pi as a notation for an on-policy distribution for the given policy. So in this soft actor critic approach, the authors propose to optimize what they call a maximum entropy objective, where the goal is not just to optimize rewards in every state and every action, but also the entropy of the policy. So here we are sampling the states and actions from the on-policy distribution, and the gamma is being buried there using this usual termination, the form of the termination. So that's why it seems there are no gammas here, but they are hidden inside the probabilities of actually being able to get to the given state and action pair. Yep. So the one of the most important hyperparameters of the approach is alpha. Right? Alpha is some kind of a temperature which tells us how much is the entropy useful and how much do we really want to optimize the original rewards. In the original paper, the authors really just assumed that this is a hyperparameter which needs to be set, and it was actually one of the most sensitive or one of the most important hyperparameters of the architecture, because the correct value depends very much on the environment, because the magnitude of the rewards definitely influences the reasonable value of how much do we really want to use the entropy. Right. So when we look at the objective, what we generally want is we want to behave well, meaning we want to achieve good performance, but we also want high entropy, right? So we prefer policies which really consider some non-trivial like variety. And the main idea, or the like the main idea is that with this our policy will be more general, right? If our policy can achieve a good performance and still be non-trivially stochastic, then probably it will be able to handle various different trajectories on which we can embark. So that was not that fluent, but nevertheless, let's go on. So to be exact, what do the authors propose? Well, they propose to use an environment with augmented reward, where the reward for a given policy in a given state and action is the original reward. But then we have the entropy. And now the entropy is actually in the state following the current state action pair. Right? So we are, in fact, like in the previous in this original settings, we kind of thought this entropy is being measured in the same state, but it would be more practical to actually like whenever we compute or get a reward, we will include entropy for the next state. Actually, this is just for practical reasons, and we will not. It doesn't influence much, because the only difference is the entropy in the first state, right? This way we are ignoring the entropy of the initial state, but other than that, all the entropies are there. And so so we can imagine that we are actually working in the usual settings, but where the reward has been augmented in this way. And in this augmented settings, we can define the soft value function and the soft action value function to be the usual value function and action value function in this augmenting settings. So first we will start with some theoretical algorithm. We have been using generally the generalized policy iteration in most of our algorithm. And so we will try to derive some soft analogy of that, which could be used together with this entropy objective. So to do that, we will start with the soft policy evaluation, right? In policy evaluation, we had a fixed policy, and our goal was to come up with the value function or the action value function for the given policy. So in order to do it here, let T be a modification of the... there's a question in the chat. So how is the entropy useful in the objective? So it's useful in a settings that when our agent performs, so when it samples trajectories, then if this entropy element is high, then it will explore more, right? Because the entropy of choosing an action should be high, meaning there should be more like surprise or more unsureness whenever the policy is being used. So by increasing entropy, we are effectively increasing exploration, and this way we don't care just about the behavior of the agent itself, but also the level of exploration it can achieve. So this way we can trade off slightly a higher level of exploration for some decrease in the score. So the idea is to, like, we have always been dealing with the exploration-exploitation trade-off. So this is another way how we can enforce or motivate exploration. And we will see that using this kind of objective will actually allow us to do the policy improvement in quite a special way. So we could, of course, do it like we are doing this anyway, right? We are adding the entropy penalty to the loss in many of the recent algorithms. But once we embedded the entropy in the environment or in the reward itself, it will allow us to train the algorithm in some specific way, which we will see in a few slides. So first, to do the policy iteration, right? We assume that we are given a policy pi, and we would like to know its value function, action value function to be exact. So what do? Is we define like a modified version of the Bellman backup operator. And what it does, well, given some action value function for a state and action, we define the updated or the output action value function to be the reward in that state and action, plus gamma times the expectation of the soft value function in the next state, where the soft value function in the next state is the action value function. So that's something what you would expect. And here is the entropy penalty. Right. So normally with the usual in the usual settings, this just would be here. And we will be happy. But now we have added here. Now I am not no longer writing entropy, right? But this is like the entropy from the definition because of the expectation of the negative log probability, which is the entropy, and the alpha is the temperature of how much do we want to influence the rewards. Now this minus is there just because it's in the definition of the entropy. So when we define the modified Bellman operator like this, then it's not difficult to see that this is like just the usual Bellman backup operator for the augmented rewards, right? So if we consider an environment which uses this RPi instead of the original reward, then we would get exactly this. So repeated application of this operator converges to the value function, and this was actually just a simple modification to adapt our original algorithm to the slightly new setting. So the more interesting part will be the soft policy improvement. Right, in the original policy improvement, what we did is we said, okay, so let's create a new policy, and the new policy just performs the best possible action in every state. So maybe I should say for a state S, so it's the best possible action which we can do given SNA. And now we then prove that the new policy is actually at least as good as the original policy. Given that in the initial settings, we kind of assumed that there is just a finite number of state and actions, there was only a finite number of policies. So after some finite time, we would end up with the optimal policy. But now the situation is a bit more complex. So assume that we have some current policy pi. We have its action value function q pi, which we got from the soft policy evaluation on the previous slide, and we want to improve it. And we probably don't just want to find any better policy, but because we represent our policies using neural networks, then we need to select the improved policy from some family of parameterized distributions, meaning we cannot just decide what our policy will be. Instead, we need to use a policy which we can represent using some neural networks with some parameters. So let's say that Big Pi is a space of all such parameterized distributions. And so now will be the slightly frightening yet very useful part. So what we do is we define our improved policy by prime by minimizing some objective function, j pi. And this subjective function is the following. So we consider all possible policies and minimize the KL divergence between the policy and a policy which we create from the action value function. So we take the soft action value function and we turn it into policy. So this is the interesting part, right? When we were using deep Q networks, then the only thing which we could do is we could argmax all the possible actions. But in these settings, we actually have a way of turning the action value function, like our expected performance in a given state in action, into a policy. Right? And how we do it? Well, we take the exponentiation of the action value function. Right, and this by this dot, what I mean is we need to do a distribution or create a distribution. Right, so we consider a distribution which is proportional to this quantity. So the larger the Q value is, the larger probability we will allocate to that given action. So there is this 1 over alpha there, because the entropy part, right, the part where we have actually included entropy inside this Q value function will be an important, will play an important role here. So this 1 over alpha makes sure that the alpha goes away, and this part will really contain the raw E to the entropy. From now on, we will not actually discuss alpha during this soft policy improvement consideration. They don't do it in the paper as well. They just mention at this point that this needs to happen for the math to work. So now when we are defining a distribution which is proportional to this E to the action value function, we of course need to make sure it is a distribution. It means that it sums to one, right? So here we have the partition function, so some constant, which is really just the integral of the denominator, so E to 1 over alpha Q pi S A D A. Right, that is probably quite difficult to compute, but we don't really care because it's just a constant. It doesn't really depend on neither the policy nor any parameters. It's really just a constant value. So we will be able to really ignore it. So it is there, so that formally this makes sense, but it's not really. It will not play any role in our algorithms. Yep. So this is cool, right? Because the maximum entropy criterion, the objective which we added to our rewards, allowed us to turn action value functions into policies. However, we also need to show that it actually works, right? So using this kind of an update, we would like to show that this policy pipeline is actually an improvement. So what we will do is we will prove that actually for any state and action, the expected return of the improved policy is indeed larger or equal to the expected return of the original policy, and the improvement happened. So we start by noting that this objective function J for this pi prime, that's the result of the policy improvement, is less or equal to the original, to the value of the original policy. And that definitely makes sense because the pi prime is the minimum of this objective, right? So for any other policy, even for the original one, its value must be less, larger or equal. So this is definitely true. And now we will write the definition of the function which we want to minimize. So what we want to minimize is the KLI divergence between the original policy and the policy created from the action value function. So the KLI divergence of P and Q is the expectation over P of log P minus log Q, right? So this is just the definition of the KLI divergence. So that's what's happening here. This log of pi prime, that's the logarithm of this part, right? And then this second part, that's the minus logarithm of the second part. So the logarithm and the exponentiation cancel away. So what we have here, say, I said we will be ignoring the alpha, so no more alpha. And here is the action value function. And then here is the log of the partition function. And then this point is gray because it will cancel out with the other side and we'll get rid of it. So we do the same thing on both the left and the right side. Now on the right side, all the policies are the original pi's. On the left side, this pi means the action value function is used for the original pi, but this improved pi prime is being used in this expectation and also in this entropy part. So now let's slightly rewrite this. So we will cancel or we will just get rid of these partition functions. And now looking at the right hand side, we can see that this is actually a minus of the value function. So what we will do is we will multiply, this by minus one, right? That will cancel, that change the direction of this. Now there will be minus plus, plus minus. And now this, that's really the soft value function, right? It's something that we did define here. The value function is the expectation over the action of the action value function minus the entropy or maximum entropy objective. So that's what's happening here, right? We have got the Q and then the logarithm. So we rewrite this into the original value function. And here on the left side, what do we have? Well, we cannot really improve it that much, but we have here an expectation over the improved policy. And here we have the value function of the original policy, but the entropy penalty from the new policy. So now, what this is, this plays a role of what we had in the original policy improvement theorem. In the original policy improvement theorem, we have shown that our improved policy, right, is everywhere better than the original value function. right? This is something which hold when we were proving the original theorem. So this will play a similar role, right? Performing actually the actions with respect to the new policy, right? This is this thing. And then using it both to be performed in the given state, and also in the entropy computation. So if we do it, like behave in one step in a new way, and we evaluate that using the original action value function, right? Original action value function. So that's exactly like an analog of what we had in the previous theorem. So right now, the rest of the proof is completely the same as before. So we start by considering the original action value function Q pi for some given state and action. So by definition, this is the reward plus gamma times the behavior of the policy pi in the next state. Now we use this inequality. So we say that this is less or equal, and now we rewrite or expand this value function in the next state by the expectation where the actions are being chosen from the improved policy, right? And then we have the action value function in the next state of the next action, and then we have the entropy penalty. Now we'll be able to repeat these two steps over and over and over and over, right? So we will expand, and this Q pi will get rewritten using a single step into the value function in the S double prime, and then the value function in the S double prime will be rewritten using this inequality, so that the expectation can change to the new policy, and so on and so on and so on. So what will we get here generally? Well, we will always get here reward, right? And then gamma times the reward in the next state, but this time the actions are being sampled from the new policy, right? So what will be there in the end is actually the action value function of the new policy, right? Because that's what we need. In the original action value function, we are sampling actions using the original policy. So this inequality tells us, okay, if we perform one step using the policy pi prime, and then here inside this action value function, we follow the original policy, then our performance is at least as good as it was before. Right, and but because the environment is Markovian, we can really iterate the argument. So if our policy improves using single step, it actually improves using any number of steps. So that's what's happening here in this expansion, that if each step doesn't make it worse, well, then all of the steps only can make it at least as good or even better. So it means we really improve the policy. So this weird thing can actually provide us with a policy which is at least as good as the original one. So that means we are nearly done, right? And we can define describe the soft policy iteration. So in the soft policy iteration, we alternate between the soft policy evaluation and the soft policy improvement, similarly to before. And the repeated applications of these two steps produce better and better policies. Now there is a proof in the original theorem which states that this repeated application actually converges to some optimum policy, and that optimum policy or the thing which it converges to is actually the optimum policy. Now, I don't actually believe the proof is correct in the original paper, but I couldn't really find any more information about that. Just two blog posts where people just rewrote the arguments of the original authors. So instead, I'm proving slightly weaker assumption, which I actually believe is true. So generally, repeating these two steps generates better and better policies. And what I say is that if the algorithm converges to some policy, meaning the policy improvement doesn't change or doesn't improve the policy, right? It produces policy with the same value, then this point where the algorithm converged is actually the optimum policy, meaning it is at least as good as any other policy in the family. Right. What I'm not sure about is that if you converge to the policy, right, it can happen that you will not converge in a finite number of time. In the previous theorem, we just had a finite number of states, finite number of actions, so there were just a finite number of policies, so this improvement had to stop. Right now, our policies are distributions over real values, so there are a lot of them. So it is easily imaginable that we are actually converging, but never getting to some specific policy. And I can make the proof in the paper work, like this part where we prove that we have an optimum policy, only when we know that the algorithm converges in a sense that the policy improvement doesn't improve the policy anymore. It doesn't really matter much because this still assumes that we are doing the policy evaluation fully and the policy improvement fully, like really minimizing the KL divergence. In practice, we'll be performing these steps only to some degree, right? Just slightly better evaluate the policy and slightly improve it, as we have done in our algorithms all the time until now. So in the end, we don't really care that much if the algorithm might not converge because we are not fulfilling many other conditions which this would require us to do. In any case, if we have converged, so we have got some pi star, and this pi star cannot be improved anymore by the policy improvement, right? By this part, then what holds is that the j, the value which we want to minimize for the current converged policy, is smaller or equal to the objective function for any other policy, right? This just means we cannot make any more progress. So if this is true, we can actually use the same reasoning as here, right? Expand the j's, then show this inequality, but on the other side, then repeat these applications with the opposite inequality and get that actually the action value function for the pi star is greater or equal to the action value function of any policy. So that's a good thing, right? Now we have some theoretical background for our algorithm, and what it allows us to do, it allows us to like turn action value functions into policies. So let's define or describe an algorithm. The SI algorithm is usually called soft actor critic, and it will be an off-policy algorithm with continuous action spaces. So these properties are quite similar to the DDPG, and it is actually an alternative to the DDPG. Now, the model consists of two critics, so Q theta 1 and Q theta 2. Two target critics, right? In order to make the training more stable, we will again use target networks, so we'll have actually two of them, one for each of the critics, and then we'll have a single actor. So compared to TD3, we don't have the target actor, right? We do that in TD3. We have got two critics, one actor, and everything has its target version, but we don't need it here. The authors state that with just a single critic, all the described experiments converge, They also state that they adopted the idea of two critics on the TD3 paper. So originally they didn't do it, but then they saw that it is working and use that. And what they also say is that using two critics significantly speeds up training, whatever significantly means. So we now need to show how we will train the components. So in order to train the critic, we will turn to our modified Bellman backup operator, right? Which that was this one, right? And we know that repeated application of this converges to the action value function of the given policy. So we will use it as a target for our critic. So our loss will be the mean square error between the current value of the critic and then value. Here we have the reward plus gamma times the value function in the next state. We do this for both of the critics independently. We use the same target, which I will expand momentarily. So we train both critics like with the same data actually. And now the value function in the next state actually uses the minimum over our critiques, right? So because of this maximization bias being present also in DDPG, we say, okay, so in order to get more pessimistic estimate, we will consider the minimum of the Q function in the given state and action. And of course, minus the entropy in the current state. So this is for the critic. Now the target critics are updated to you again using just the exponentiation moving average with some momentum tau. We will discuss the hyperparameter values momentarily when we go through the losses. So the actor is of course being trained by directly minimizing the KL divergence, right? We want to do the one step of this policy improvement. And so what does this KL divergence look like? Well, there was this DKL here, and then there was the policy, which we have, right, and the action value function. So it was like e to the q. We replace, or we can expand the KL divergence by the expectation of taking the actions from the current policy, I'm thinking maybe alpha is there. So now I'm a bit surprised that we have the alpha here, right? We didn't really have the alpha in the improvement. Oh yeah, we had it here. So it was moved to the left side. Okay, that makes sense. and we minimize this directly by using a single sample of a state, of course, and using a single sample for an action. Now, an interesting fact or interesting way how to proceed is, we have these Q target networks, which are differentiable because they are modeled by neural networks. And we have policies which are on a continuous action space. So what we will do is we will minimize this value directly. So this policy, it's stochastic, right? So it generates actions, but not just a single action, but really like a random action. In the DDPG, we assume that our policy was deterministic, right? And with deterministic policy, we could really compute like directly the derivative. We could have proven the deterministic policy gradient theorem and be happy. But then we had to induce or add the noise in some ad hoc way during training. So this exploration was like added there manually. Right now, our policies are stochastics by themselves. So we cannot really say that they produce a single value. But what we can do is we can use the reparametrization trick. Right? And we can say, okay, let's represent our policy by some neural network, which gets the current state, right? And then samples from the distribution generated by the model, but using the provided noise sample. So at this point, I kind of assume you have seen the reparametrization trick because when VAE is being trained, then that's a usual strategy. But if you haven't, then feel free to object and tell me, and I can tell you more about it. But generally, what's happening now is that we have the policy. Right, the policy, now it's called f instead of pi. So the policy produces a distribution. So you can imagine that it produces a distribution with some mu produced by the f, or maybe less. This f network produces some mu and some sigma squared, which describes a distribution. And now we want to sample an action from this distribution, but in a way that this sample actually can be differentiated through, like it can be backpropagated through. And for that, we know that, for example, for normal distribution, we can write the sampling in a sense that it will be mu plus some sampling noise times the standard deviation, so it should probably be like this, and then the epsilon is being sampled from n0, 1. And so I either directly sampling from this normal distribution parameterized by this mu and sigma squared, that's the same thing as sampling in this way, or as computing an action in this way by using a noise sample from the standard normal distribution. And the reparametrization trick lies in the fact that this sample epsilon, it doesn't depend or it doesn't use the output of the f in any way, right? So all the parameters, all the parts which were computed or produced by our network, they are used in a differentiable way, right? The only thing which we can differentiate through or backpropagate through is the sampling of this noise sample. But because it doesn't depend on any of the parameters, it's fine. So we can do this. And we can assume that the actions are actually really sampled directly during the computation. For that, we use like really sample from an unbounded Gaussian distribution. Now, in this treatment, I kind of assume that we really have just a single action, which is definitely, which might not be the case. We might need to generate several actions, so whole vector. So if the actions are vectors, then of course we do the same thing for each action. So you can look at it that we are sampling from a multivariate diagonal Gaussian distribution. Anyway, but after reparametrization, what our loss is, well, instead of sampling the actions, we are sampling the noise, right? And then we use this result of our F function as an action, both in the entropy computation and in the action value computation of both the critics. Now, it might seem weird that we have here both pi and f, right? The thing is, the pi gives us a probability of a given action, right? So this pi doesn't do much, like formally, it just tells us how probable the action computed by this f is, right? So this pi really is like a formal way how to say that we both need the action, right? Because the action is being given to the critic. And secondly, we need to know the probability, or the log probability of the selected action. So internally, our f will like generate a distribution, and then when we sample, the distribution will tell us two pieces of information. One is the sampled action, and the other is the log prop of the sampled action. And then we'll use the log prop on the left side and the action itself on the right side. So what we are seeing now is like a generalization of the deterministic policy gradient, but to stochastic policies, right? But stochastic policies are over the continuous action spaces. Well, if somebody wanted to be like really sci-fi, this reparametrization trick can be performed also on a categorical variable. It is actually possible to sample from like a distribution just of k values, but let's not get there. I haven't seen a paper which would use discrete policies in this way, but it would probably also be possible. But let's stick with the safe area of continuous policies in this setting. Yep. So we will just deal with two more details, and we'll be ready to describe the final algorithm. First, right now we sampled the actions from the Gaussian distribution, but that's unbounded. Right? Generally, this is kind of problematic because we need to produce actions in a bounded region, in a bounded range, but we wanted to sample from it in a reasonable way, right? So what we have done in DDPG or DD3 is that we have used tonnage to squash the actions. And once we have squashed them, we have externally added the noise, right? But here we want the policy to be stochastic. So we actually want a stochastic policy which will produce a bounded action. So we cannot really say that the policy will produce a value like this, because then it might easily produce values outside of the range. So we somehow need to make sure that whatever the policy generates is in a given region, but it is still a distribution. Luckily, we can do it, and we can apply some invertible squashing function on the original distribution. So again, we'll use tonnage actually. So assume that we have a policy which produces unbounded actions. So U as unbounded. And we would like to modify it so that it generates actions in the bounded range by really squashing the unbounded actions. And we would like to define a new distribution, this pi bar. However, we cannot just say that, well, we will just take the pi u for the image of A. We also need to perform the change of variables, right? If you want to define a new distribution by changing the variables in an old one, you need to account for the fact that the mapping which you have can change the density of the distribution. So I always don't remember whether here It must be the derivative of the one variable with respect to the other, or the other way around. So I took this order from the paper, but I believe it's fine. So when we define our transform distribution, we need to multiply by the inverse of the derivative of the tan h function. But that's simple, right? The derivative of tan h is just 1 minus tan h squared. So now the log likelihood actually has quite a simple form. So the log likelihood of the transform distribution is the logarithm of the original one. And now minus, right? It's this minus actually, logarithm of the derivative of tan h. So this is the way how we can update, like how we can compute this part while squashing the actions with the tan h function. So that's a good thing. Now, many TensorFlow definitely has a way how this can be done, like automatically. If you have a distribution, you can apply something called a bijector on it. Right, and bijector is really like some bijective mapping, and this change of variables can happen automatically for you under the hood, and using the auto differentiation techniques, this can actually happen without you noticing if you do it correctly. But I think all implementations which I've seen actually explicitly compute the log likelihood in this part by manually including this tan h computation. But I think we can use the advanced PF probability stuff. But I'm not really sure how this works in PyTorch. So that's why I am describing it explicitly here as well. And I said that there are two more points. So this was one of it. So the last issue is something what the authors called automatic entropy adjustment. Now, one of the most important hyperparameters, as I already mentioned, is the entropy penalty alpha. That needs to be tuned per environment, and if its value is not correct, it will not train very well. In the original paper, the one from the beginning from 2018, the authors really manually tuned the penalty. But in the later paper, they actually came up with a way how this entropy penalty can be adjusted in some automatic way. It's not, I kind of liked it, and it also seems to work. So the main idea is that instead of setting this entropy penalty alpha directly, what we could do is we could instead specify a target entropy value. Right? The problem of alpha is that depending on the magnitude of rewards in the environment, we need to adjust alpha to achieve some level or some quantity of entropy. So let's go. But like look at it from the other way around, and instead of defining some weird constant, let's define the entropy value which we want our policy to have. Right? So let's that be this h. And then if we have this given entropy value, then what we could do is we could optimize a constraint minimization problem instead of the one proposed at the beginning. So we would be maximizing just the return, but in such a way that the entropy of our policy is at least the given H. And now, given that the given the like it is quite likely that this inequality will actually be equality, right? Because we would expect the deterministic policy to really achieve a good performance. So we wouldn't expect the entropy to be larger than necessary by itself. So probably this inequality will be equality because we will have the given entropy value, but not more because the idea or the goal of performing as good as possible probably pushes us to this, in the direction of the deterministic policies. Anyway, now that we want to optimize a constraint optimization problem, we can just go to KKT conditions, right? Like this advanced version of Lagrange multipliers and form a Lagrangian. And what we do is we optimize the reward plus alpha times the condition. And now this is then quite similar to what we are optimizing at the beginning, right? And this alpha, this original entropy penalty, is really just a Lagrange multiplier for our condition to hold. So this should be maximized with respect to pi, but minimized with respect to the Lagrange multiplier, and it must be less or equal to zero, right? This is just the KKT conditions. So in order to really come up with some algorithm, how to do it, we use the so-called dual gradient descent. And in dual gradient descent, we alternate between maximizing with respect to pi and minimizing with respect to alpha under some convexity guarantees or assumptions. This can be proven to converge. Well, of course, we are definitely not in a settings where things would be convex, but the authors state that in practice, this dual gradient descent seems to be working fine. So, after all these two slides, what do we do, in fact? So we just add another loss, a third loss, which will be computed with respect to alpha, and the goal will be to minimize this quantity, and this quantity is minus alpha times the entropy, minus alpha times the target entropy. Now, when you throw away all these fancy sexy words like Lagrangian and KKT conditions, then and if you just take a look at the loss, then the loss definitely makes sense. Well, I will convince you that it makes sense. What it does is the following. Well, if the now we want to minimize it, right? So now I have to think. If the minus logarithm of pi as is less than alpha times h, right? So, or if this entropy is less than the target value, then what we have here is alpha times something which is less than zero, right? And minimizing this means we will make our lambda stronger, right? So if our entropy is less than what it should be, we will actually increase our temperature, right? And if it's the other way around, we will decrease it. So you can look at it really practically by saying, okay, we actually want to play with alpha so that the observed expected entropy, right, that's this left bar, is equal to the target value which we want to achieve. So you could come up with such an algorithm even without all the theoretical mumbo jumbo. They spend one and a half pages on it. I've actually condensed it quite a lot for you, but still, it is maybe a bit too much, right? We could just say, okay, so we instead of having some specific alpha, we want a specific version of entropy. So we track the entropy of the current policy, and if it's too little, then we increase alpha, and if it's too large, we decrease it and be done with it. So now we can describe the full algorithm. So this is from the paper. We have two critics, two target critics, and we collect experience, as you would expect. We sample from the policy. It's stochastic, so no additional exploration is necessary, and we store our experience in the replay buffer. And now, to train, we minimize three losses, right? One is the critic loss, right? That was this one. Then we have the actor loss, where we have reparametrized the policy, so it really uses a stochastic sample inside. And the final loss is the one which sets alpha, right? That's this one. And of course, we do the exponential moving average to update the target network weights. So in the end, the algorithm is not that bad. Let's look at the hyperparameters. So the authors just use ADEM. They use slightly smaller learning rate than usual, but for more advanced environments, that's not unseen. Like usual discount, usual replay buffer size, two hidden layers, 256 units, batches of size 256. Then the entropy target, what they want to achieve is minus the dimensionality of the actions. So if you have two actions, they want the entropy to be minus two. Like generally for a single action, for a single component, they want minus one. Now minus one might seem weird, but we are in the case of continuous policies, and we just use differential entropy, right? So for continuous distributions, the entropy works differently than for the discrete ones. In the discrete case, the entropy is always positive, or non-negative at least. But that's not true once we start processing the continuous distribution. So it seems weird, but it's really like some amount of entropy. And the target smoothing coefficient is set to some value. So maybe let's have a look. Let's have a look at the. Yep. So these are the hyperparameters of the TD3. So in the set, in the sense they are quite similar. They use slightly larger batch size, the same tau, right? Same gamma. So in the end, they are not really that much different. Now to compare the performance, here we can see the comparison with the DDPG, TD3, and two versions of the soft actor critic, one with a fixed temperature, which was manually tuned on the environment, and the other with a learned temperature, so including this third loss for optimizing alpha. So generally, you can see that the DDPG is the worst, and all these assignments, all the environments are the one from the multiple joints with constraints. I looked up why it's called this, and this is really like an abbreviation, so it's multiple joints with context. So I think you'd pronounce it as Majoko. Mama joins context, yeah, Majoko, probably. So these are the environments from it. So the TD3 is the, our DDPG seems to be the worst. The PPO, which we haven't talked about yet, we'll probably mention it on the last lecture, is also not very good. Then the TD3 performs quite well in many of the environments, but not that great in the other ones. That's what they say. Especially here, it's weird because the DDPG does better. So we wouldn't expect TD3 to be worse. But anyway, the most important part are the soft actor critics. So the soft actor critics seem to be the best in all of them. And now The blue one, like that's the one with a learned temperature. So the blue one has a one less hyperparameter. Generally, we see that it achieves like the same or slightly worse performance. Like here it's slightly worse, here it's slightly worse, here is maybe substantially worse. There are also environments where the learned temperature seems to actually be better, right? So this kind of adaptive way of coming up with the entropy kind of works. But if you like the what you got is that you were able to get rid of setting the most fragile hyperparameter and got reasonable performance. So I think that at least for the initial implementation using this automatic level settings of alpha is a good idea. So let's look at some ablations. For the final evaluation, it still seems that the deterministic evaluation is better, right? So when you want to behave the best, really just taking the mean of the proposed actions seems to work the best. That's what we have observed so far, so that's not really surprising. So here there is the experiment that the reward scale, right, that this is like 1/alpha or something, is really important. So for bad values, we will get bad performance. We really need to be careful to set it reasonably. And then the authors also try to evaluate different strengths of the exponential moving average, tau. And as you would expect, again, we need to be somewhere in a reasonable middle. So generally, the range for this tau is quite wide and tends to be the same. So we have seen that all these DDPG, TD3, and everybody just uses 0.005, which seems to work well in practice, at least for the continuous environments. Yep. So that was the soft actor critic algorithm. So this is my first round explaining it. So I'm open to any suggestions. Also, if you have any questions or comments, then I will be glad to answer them. If not, then let's change the subject a bit. Now, I wasn't sure how long this will take, so I have a lot of materials in the slides, which I actually am not expecting to be covering on this lecture. So if you are worried that we are just on the slide 18, don't be. It's perfectly fine. So we will implement the soft actor critic in the practicals, so we will get more familiar with it there. So now let's change our focus a bit. And let's do something slightly boring yet useful, updates or like rewrites, or like discuss how, like, what is the best way how to actually estimate n-step return, right? Until now, we have just used the ordinary n-step return, which we denote as g, so it's a return from time t to t plus n. And what does this include? Well, this includes the n minus one, yep, or n, yeah, it's like n rewards, right? So if it's n-step, then we really perform n steps in the environment. We get n rewards, which we multiply by the suitable discount factor. And then if the episode is still running, right, we compute the estimate in the state t plus n, again multiplied by the suitable discount factor. Now we can rewrite this in a recursive way. and saying, okay, so the episode already ended, well, then just return zero. If we can use no more steps, we just estimate the value using the value function, that's this part, right? And otherwise, we'll do this one step. So we will include the current reward plus gamma times the return in the next n minus one, n minus steps. And now we will rewrite this in a slightly weird way. So we had this last part, right? Where the n step return was reward plus gamma times the n minus one step return. So let's consider that and let add minus the value function in the original SD there. So this value function will be moved. Okay. Okay. This one is still being there. What I'm just doing is I'm just borrowing and lending gamma times v st plus one. Why am I doing it? Well, here I have the difference between the return and the value function. So I would like to do the same thing here so that I can use this as a recursive definition. So I will add here this minus gamma times value function in the st plus one and just return it here. So this way we can say that this is still the same. We are just reorganizing a bit. So we are saying, okay, the difference between the n step return and the value function is this quantity plus gamma times the recursive n minus one step return. And now this part, that's actually a TD error, right? That's like the difference between the one step in the environment minus our value function in the original state. So if we denote this as delta T, like one step TD error, then we can write an n step return just as a sum of TD errors. Right, because we know that this g minus value function is the actual TD error plus gamma times and then recursively over and over and over and over. So we can say, okay, the n step return is the value function in the given state plus n TD errors, each multiplied by a suitable gamma. Now, this is just like a reordering or reorganization of the original n-step return, but this form will allow us to actually come up with algorithms which will decrease variance in off-policy estimation, and it will allow us to include the so-called eligibility traces. So now let's start with the first thing, and the first thing will be to improve our off-policy correction. So until now, when we wanted to apply the off-policy correction, we computed the important sampling ratio factors, rho t, right? And let's say that rho from t to t plus n, like n step important sampling correction, is really just a multiplication of these factors. So first, what we will realize or know is that the expectation of this important sampling ratio is actually one, right? Because it's a ratio between two distributions. So if we it should probably be one because it's like a ratio of probabilities under two distributions. So it shouldn't be more than one or less than one because the distribution sum to one. But formally, this expectation is really just a sum or integral where the value is weighted by the probability under the behavior policy. So these two things will will cancel out, and it's really just the sum of the probabilities under the target policy, so it's really one. And of course, this can be extended to say that any sequence of the important sampling ratios is one. So, until now, whenever we performed important sampling, what we did is we took the n-step return and then applied the important sampling correction. So on the complete n-step return, we applied a complete n factors of the important sampling ratio. However, such a correction has two large variants. It can be made better. And now, imagine that we expand this using a single step, right? So we say this n step return is the reward plus gamma times the n minus one step return. Now, this reward, it depends on action AT. So we definitely need to use the raw T in order to account for the fact that the AT was sampled by the behavior policy and we want to get this expectation over the target policy. However, the rest ratios, the rest rows are not really needed. We don't need to correct the reward in times T plus one by important sampling ratios, which are in the future, right? They play no role in the reward in times T plus one. So we can easily say that this reward in times T plus one needs to be corrected, like only AT plays a role in it. So the raw T is the only needed factor. Of course, in the n minus one step, like the recursive definition, we need to include all the important sampling ratio factors, of course. Yep. And we can write this recursively by saying that this important sampling ratio, like this IS version, works like this. We apply this one-step correction for time t, compute the reward, which is not being corrected by additional factors, and then use a recursive definition of the n minus one step return, which is corrected in this way, right? So this way, we have an estimate with less variance, and we can improve even more. Now this is a nice trick. the thing is, imagine that the raw t is zero, right? That means we have sampled some action from the behavior policy, which has zero probability in the target policy. That means that this would be zero, right? Because the rho t would be zero. However, we could do better, right? If we cannot see anything from the transitions themselves, we might just return the value v instead, right? So what we could do is we could improve our definition, and in addition to return rho t times the recursive expansion of the return. But apart from that, we could also return one minus rho t times the value function in the current state. So this is fine because this state S and this correction are independent. Right, this deals with the way how we have selected actions in the two policies, and this just is the original state. So these are independent random variables, and because they are independent, when computing the expectation over the rho t, we can just ignore this, and we know that the rho t has an expected value of one. So this part is actually not there in expectation, right? So this part doesn't influence the result, doesn't change the bias or something, but what it does is it decreases variance, right? And it decreases variance because if the the off-policy correction like goes bad way. Like if we have, we need to correct what happened during the transitions, then either we can say that the value of the rest like is zero, like ignore the okay again this important sampling ratio is like a factor which we need to include in order to transform the end step return to the current policy. So what you could do is you could again consider it like a form of termination, right? You can say, okay, if this is 0.5, right? Then like I use this value, and in the 0.5, in the rest 50% of the cases, I just stopped and I observed no return. So what I'm saying, okay, so let in that rest amount, last number of cases, in the remaining 50% of the cases, let's instead observe the value function in the given ST, right? That can only help us. That's something similar to what we did in the tree backup, right? If we went off the trajectory, we just use our Q value estimates instead of zeros. So technically, introducing this term doesn't really change the expectation. It definitely decreased the variance, but I'm only hand waving here that it's a good idea that this term would actually decrease variance. However, now when we have this formulation, we can rewrite by saying, okay, let's consider again the difference between the end separator and the value function in the ST, right? So that's probably just this part. And here on the right-hand side, we have this part being left there. And now again, what we will do, we will realize that this row can go to the beginning. And we will, again, because we want to use the recursive definition, right? Then we again borrow and give this gamma times V ST plus one. And what's happening? Well, this is again our temporal difference error. So we can say that this n step control variate return can be computed as the value function, and then again a sum of TD errors. But this time we don't only have there the discount factors, but also the important sampling ratios, right? So this is like a better version of an off-policy estimate, which has decreased the variance by two tricks. One is by using the control variate, and the other by not discounting or not correcting the return by the factors from the future. And it also can be used or computed fast. So that's a good thing. So, yeah. So I kind of get that this might seem like a bit boring, like we are just moving things around, but eventually they will come up, they will allow us to come up with like a better way to estimate the returns. And many of the like modern algorithms, the recent algorithms, actually use some kind of this n-step return. So instead of really just summing, we want to be able to include the important sampling ratios as effectively as possible, and also we want to be we will want to use a technique like a variance reduction technique, which is called eligibility traces. And now I'm wondering whether we want to go through it, but yeah, I think we can. It will be fast. So, what are the eligibility traces? The eligibility traces are a mechanism which allows us to combine multiple n-step returns for various n's. Until now, it was always, let's use two-step return, let's use five-step return, and that was it. However, we might use actually any combination of the n-step return. We might say, okay, let's consider a two-step return, and let's consider a four-step return, and then combine them by these weights, two-thirds and one-third. And actually, any weighted combination of n-step returns has the same expectation, right? So we can actually combine n-step returns in any way. So for a given lambda, what we can do is we can define the so-called lambda return. And the lambda return is a combination, there is an image here, is a combination of one-step return, two-step returns, two-step return, three-step return, until like an infinite step return, all combined together. So in order to make sure that this is really a distribution, like a weighted combination which sums to one, then for the one-step return, right, we have it there with the weight one, and then the two-step return is there with a factor of lambda, and then we have lambda squared times the three-step return, and so on and so on and so on. So we have really like these n-step returns for various n's from one to infinity. And we want to weight them, right? So this geometric series, lambda to I from zero to infinity, well, that's just 1/(1 − λ). Right, so in order to make or to change these weights so that they sum to one, we actually need to divide them by this 1/(1 − λ). So we just multiply them by 1/λ. So for example, a three-step return is weighted by 1 − λ times lambda square. Right, this way, the total area of these weights is actually one. And this way, we can combine n-step returns for n number of n. Right, so we are combining one-step return, two-step return, three-step returns, and so on and so on. And the larger the n, the less weight we actually use. We can also look at it in this way. You can say, okay, this lambda, the so-called lambda return, can be considered to be one-step return weighted by 1 − λ, and then lambda times the return in the given time step plus gamma times the lambda return from the next time step, right? So what we do is from all these g's, we take out rt plus one, right? They have, from all but the first, right? This one step return is hidden here. So from all but the first, we take the RT plus one, so that the sum of the weights there for these returns for all but the first is actually lambda, right? So this is the return taken out from it. And here we have gamma times the recursive definition of the same thing, so the lambda return in the next time step. Yeah, so this is like implemented in a sense that this is like an infinite series, but of course that's not true in practice because, well, we never go to the infinity. And specifically, if we have an episodic task, we can explicitly say that at some point we will stop this expansion and we will not consider any longer n-step returns. So what we can say, okay, you can say that we have some time of termination, like t. And then the lambda return from time t is the same sum as before, right? But once we get to the termination time, right, all the remaining returns are just the full returns, right? And they have the weight of sum over like 1 minus lambda times lambda from to I from I d minus 1 to infinity. And now this, yep, like this, yep, which when you sum up amounts to this one specific constant lambda. So this way, what have we achieved? We have a way of estimating value function using not just one step return or two step return, but like a smooth combination of any n step returns. And this lambda value can be used as some kind of a variance reduction technique. Right, if we say that the lambda needs to be, I don't know, 0.1, then we mostly consider like small step returns, and we ignore the returns for large. And on the other hand, if we set it very close to one, then we consider really like a long L step return. So we have like a way how we can change what is like the number of steps which we consider most, or which we concentrate on when we compute our returns. So instead of being able to change n, we can instead change lambda, right? But it's like a smooth way of deciding what is the correct horizon where we actually want to look at. Yep. So I think that's fine for now. So let's have a small break and let's continue at 10:50 with the practicals. If you have any questions, I'll be here for the whole time, so no hesitate to ask, but it's fine if you come at 10:50. So let me pause the recording or maybe stop it.